And tonight on Coast to Coast AM, we will be talking about the Hutchison Effect, free energy, Nikola Tesla, the Philadelphia Experiment with Dr. Bob Kuntz and John Hutchison. If you have a moment, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website through the internet, through your phones, however you get there, and take a look at the Hutchison Effect. It's truly phenomenal. John was last with us back about 5 years ago. Dr. Kuntz was with me about a year ago. We're going to have them both for you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Let's first introduce Dr. Robert Kuntz to you. Bob is an experimental nuclear physicist with more than 30 years of experience in physics and high technology. Since 2002, he's been doing research in the fields of anti-gravity and free energy, and following Einstein, is currently working on a unified field theory that he hopes will explain the standard model of physics. The theory would employ the electromagnetic interaction as the basis for all known forces. Here's Dr. Bob Kuntz. Hey, Bob, welcome back. How are you?
Hello, George. I'm fine. It's an honor to speak with you again. I've got 7 pages of notes ready to go. So when you're ready, let's do it.
I love it. It's going to be a fascinating program today.
I believe so.
And I'm excited because it's my first time talking to John Hutchison, a self-taught inventor from Canada. He has become known around the world for his remarkable experiments that show physical phenomena that are not explained by conventional physics. And these various phenomena, which have come to be known as the Hutchison effect, include levitation of both massive and non-massive objects that are sometimes metallic, sometimes magnetic, and sometimes non-magnetic. Here's John Hutchison. John, how have you been?
I've been well, George. Real honor to be on the show with you and Bob Kuntz there.
Wow. Five years since you've been on Coast to Coast. What have you been doing over these years?
Oh, I'm getting into all kinds of mischief. Mostly television shows and that kind of thing and news media. Working on power cells and more anti-gravity experiments until the mayor got upset with that kind of thing because it was going into other buildings in this area here, and he ordered the fire marshal in, but we made a compromise on everything, and I started more demonstrations after that. So I've been up
John,
to a lot of mischievous things.
I got to believe when you were a youngster, you did some of the most incredible experiments. You probably had the neighborhood just going crazy, huh?
Well, yeah, I used to fire cannons off in the backyard. Black powder experiments, lightning bolts, and that kind of stuff. It was all kind of fun. It kind of upset the neighbors.
Well, tell us about the Hutchison effect. Now, I mean, we've got lots of new listeners since you were last on 5 years ago. What is the Hutchison effect?
It's an accidental discovery I made way, way back in 1979 when I was replicating a lot of Nikola Tesla's machinery, actually to the 18th century standards. And I was playing with this high-voltage equipment, and I started to notice that certain things would happen, like objects would move around by themselves a little bit. At that time, I didn't think anything of it, and I just happened to mention it to another scientist in Vancouver, who then mentioned it to another group, and they started coming around and filming the effects. Then they presented it later on after several viewings by SAIC group in San Diego, Washington State University. They presented to the U.S. Pentagon just after Ronald Reagan signed the Star Wars contract.
Ah, yeah, sure.
And then Colonel John Alexander and his team came up to witness some of the effects. And after that, I then put it on mainstream media on CTV NewsHour. Did a good demonstration for that network in Canada.
What did people think when they first saw the Hutchison effect literally in motion?
In the news media or the scientists?
In news media first.
Oh, they were all excited. I got fan mail coming in by the ton. It had to be screened to the main television station. That was way back in 1985.
How about the scientists? What happened?
Beg pardon?
How about the scientists? How did they react?
The scientists were very open-minded and very observant, especially the Los Alamos team and Colonel John Alexander.
Yeah, he's one of the best.
Yeah, he is, and he's appeared with me on several TV shows. And then later on, I did a demonstration for McDonnell Douglas Aerospace Corporation and then some other aerospace companies, and the Canadian Directorship of Scientific Technical Intelligence, Dr. Lauren Kuhn, who then they actually just classified the report. I have no access to the videos or communication to the gentleman, except from that time period. Now, it's 1986. That was on orders of Deputy Prime Minister Erik Nielsen, who was at that time Minister of Defense.
So just letters, anyway. All right, and Bob, see if you can explain for us in terms of conventional physics how the Hutchison effect works.
Well, first of all, George, you cannot explain this effect with conventional physics.
You cannot
explain it. This is not conventional physics. This is the Hutchison effect, and let me indicate that this is an extremely sophisticated operation that this young man had going in Canada. I've been doing particle physics research for 40 years and worked at Stanford and Berkeley. I've done Nobel Prizes. My winners. I've been on some very sophisticated experiments, but nothing. This is really something else. This is the most important physics I know of. This is far more important than what they're doing at CERN, in my opinion. And let me just indicate what's going on here. John has three Tesla coils he built himself to 18th or 19th century standards, very sophisticated 1 million volt Tesla coils that he modified so that they wouldn't spark. You know, most Tesla coils, when you light them up, they spark, right? I mean, the sparks fly everywhere.
Well,
so
sure.
He creates the, and then he put a tunable RF system in the primary of the Tesla coils so he could adjust the frequency. And very carefully adjusted the frequencies of these Tesla coils that are not sparking, but they're generating fields. And the fields are creating canceling electromagnetic fields, and that is not understood in terms of modern physics, classical electrodynamics. They do not understand canceling electromagnetic fields. If you ask people what happens when two photons cancel, they'll say nothing. They say it disappears. But that's not true. Two canceling photons goes into the scalar field. It produces scalar effects. And those scalar effects relate to anti-gravity. If you talk to any physicist about anti-gravity, a classical physicist, they'll tell you it's impossible. There's no theory of anti-gravity in classical physics. And, you know, John, listen, he can levitate 70-pound cannonballs without, you know, using 200 watts of power. And there's no physics theory that provides for that. And so he says he stumbled into this. It was very – that's an understatement. He spent 30 years working on this and modified it slowly over time. And also there was a 1 million volt Van de Graaff electrostatic generator operating in the system too. So this is an extremely sophisticated – this is more sophisticated even than what Tesla did in his experiments, I think. I don't know everything that Tesla did. But, you know, if you talk to any physicist and you ask them what happens when photons cancel, they can't give you an answer. It's not in classical. They say that the answer is zero. It sums to zero, but that's not true. And so this is extremely sophisticated science. This is and very, very, very important. It also relates to, this business with the Philadelphia experiment. Oh, let me just indicate. I'll give you another example here.
Right.
John is able to shred bars of steel, puts it in his apparatus, say a 3-inch thick by 3-inch thick piece of steel, maybe a foot long or 2 feet long, and the thing will turn to jelly or it'll shred. And I have pictures of it on my website. There's no conventional physics that does anything like this. There's no heat involved. In a matter of seconds, it shreds. Or it turns to jelly, or it disappears. This is extremely sophisticated. John is the master of understatement. This man, and as far as stumbling in there, this is no amateur operation. This is John is a very sophisticated scientist, and this business of tuning the primaries of Tesla coils with a very, very, very sophisticated RF generator, high current capability, is beyond most people's understanding. This is very, very sophisticated. This is not an amateur hour operation. As some people would have you believe, with a tiny little effect. This is the most sophisticated piece of apparatus I know of, or apparatus, or whatever the plural is, that I know of, and it's extremely important to physics. Classical electrodynamics, classical physics cannot explain this. In my opinion, there's not one scientist in the world that I know of, other than myself, can give you a good answer to what's going on with this system.
John, is your work being duplicated or even stolen, trying to be stolen by other members throughout the world?
There's been some indication from folks at Sandy National Laboratories. They replicated it. York University replicated a tiny part of it. A book was published just some months ago on that. But I haven't really seen any video, really, on it. Or other information except text.
I had John Searle on the program several months ago. Is this similar to his work as well? I mean, are you both going down a similar path here?
Well, this is totally different. The effects happen from the operating apparatus at a great distance. And noted in the end of 2007 that went into the actual city itself.
Well, let me just indicate that John Searle, let me indicate that the Searle effect, first of all, was replicated at the Russian Academy of Science by two conventional physicists. And the system was a 300 kilogram system, weighed about 700 pounds. It generated 7,000 watts. Listen to this now. A system, the Searle effect, it operates on the same kind of principle as John's system, that is canceling electromagnetic waves. But that system generated 7,000 watts of power, self-sustaining on its own, and lost 300 pounds of weight at the same time. It became anti-gravitic and also became a free energy system simultaneously, operating on its own. There was no power, and it levitated somewhat, lost 50% of its weight, and generated 7,000 watts of power at the time. These are conventional physicists at the Russian Academy of Science. Unfortunately, apparently, that is getting suppressed. I don't know if they classified it or what happened, but those people lost access to their apparatus.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to get into later on all kinds of applications for this incredible technology. And you, Robert, and you, John, can let us know if you think it's being applied either in extraterrestrial craft or whether the Egyptians might have possessed some of it to move blocks at the pyramid. Edward leads Scanlan down in Coral Castle. The kind of apparatus, I don't want to say machinery, but the kind of apparatus that you need to produce the Hutchison effect, is it? Can it be produced, you know, easily with standard equipment?
I tend to use a lot of old machinery, Navy-type equipment that's really highly engineered, mil-spec standards, and anything I build is to mil-spec standards. And when I'm tuning, I'm using micrometers for resonance in the cavities and that kind of thing.
Has anything ever gone awry, John? Anything gone wrong doing this? Is there any downside?
Well, I had a film person got hit by the field, wound up in a hospital in Los Angeles, and at the same time, this field went into the city of New Westminster. And that's when City Hall got upset.
Well, what happens when that happens?
Usually the mayor gets complaints and other people go to the news media and talk about it.
I mean, what does it do? How does it affect people, their homes?
It makes them dizzy sometimes, and they hear sounds in midair, doors opening up by themselves, some ornaments actually melting on their own. Cold, of course.
Well, and you know, with every good application, then there's always that group that would love to use it for some other purpose. I guess this effect could be used as a weapon, couldn't it?
Well, that was 1983 with Colonel John Alexander and friends. They basically didn't want to be surprised by Russian technology. And then in 2006, I was invited by the U.S. Pentagon after they showed my videos to 400 officers to regroup and work with them. But I respectfully declined because I was doing so many television shows with this thing, and there was talk about it being used in Iraq. I got strange emails from people saying that they were using the Hutchison effect and vaporizing buses and other things like that. So a great weapon, yes.
Let me just say that Colonel Tom Bearden is familiar with the scalar electromagnetic weapons aspects of the, this kind of system. And apparently the Soviets had these weapons as far as back as, 1960 or 1970. In fact, one of Tom Bearden's books, on the front cover, it shows a picture of a scalar electromagnetic weapon producing effects over the skies of California.
Interesting.
That's like 1970, 1975. So the Soviets, that was the Soviets then, and that would be the Russians now. Now, I think I can't imagine that they would just do not continue with the research, but I've heard that they got a little scared with, they had some accidents, and the weapons got out of control. You know, if something becomes self-sustaining, what can happen? No one knows. And so I guess they were starting to create earth resonances, and they shut the system down. Maybe they stopped the research. I don't know. You know, the Philadelphia experiment, I don't know. Well, I researched that, and I don't know for sure if it happened or not, but John Hutchison's experiments indicate it could have, because John Hutchison is able to make things go invisible. It can shred bars of steel. You know, and as far as danger, there is potential danger with his apparatus. The fields are pretty local, but I guess they become self-sustaining. They can go off on their own, like little bundles of something or other. I don't know. Scalar energy, self-sustaining scalar energy. So there is a potential danger with the weapons aspect of it. And I do believe the Russians are probably very advanced to scalar weapons. As far as I know, maybe it's too scary for him. I don't know.
How easy would it be, Bob, for physicists to duplicate what John Hutchison has invented?
Well, you have to be very careful. You can't do this in a hodgepodge fashion. You have to tune things very carefully. You just can't slap things together and say, okay, it doesn't work. I mean, it doesn't work or it does work. You have to spend time, and you have to get the right materials, and you have to get right resonances. And you see, to cancel electromagnetic fields in the right way, you have to have the right frequencies. It's a resonance phenomena, it's a vacuum fluctuation, and it has to do with the so-called longitudinal component of the electromagnetic wave, which most physicists don't understand. Most physicists use what they call a transverse gauge. They don't even believe in the longitudinal gauge. But if you use the transverse gauge for your theory and you need to use the longitudinal gauge, you see, most physicists use the transverse gauge. These are longitudinal waves, and you have to use the longitudinal wave theory. So it's complicated. You have to be careful. And conventional physicists, if they could talk with me or the right people, I think they could replicate it. Certainly these two scientists at the Russian Academy of Science did that. And you know that confirms what John Searle said. John Searle said he had a flying saucer that was flying around. He had a remote control.
Yeah, absolutely, and it kept going, and it never stopped. I guess it's still going somewhere beyond the solar system now.
Yeah, and my theory says that these things will avoid collisions. Once they get going, they'll either become invisible, or they'll just pass right through things and become. They go through something called singularities. And in physics, if you can avoid singularities, that means you're avoiding collisions, more or less. So these systems go either avoid something, or they just pass right through it and become invisible and go into another dimension. So it's funny. It's as far as space travel goes, it's the best thing you can ever imagine, because you don't need any power and you don't run into anything.
Let's talk about the propulsion with both of you when we come back. Both your websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And get up to coasttocoastam.com and take a look at the link, but a picture of the 70-pound cannonball that is levitating. Just go take a look at that. We'll be back in a moment with Dr. Robert Kuntz and John Hutchison on Coast to Coast AM. Well, for just pennies a day, you can sign up for being a Coast Insider stream link. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and sign up for that, where you get your iPhone apps, soon to be Android and BlackBerry apps as well. Those things are neat tools, by the way. Podcasting, that's also great. Archives and downloads and all those fun things to be part of Streamlink Coast Insider, simply by going to coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, more with Dr. Bob Kuntz and John Hutchison as we talk about the Hutchison effect right here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll talk about the propulsion system, Bob and John, and how it could work in terms of, let's say, a UFO or some kind of applied craft here on this planet. How would it work? Bob, you start.
George, may I interrupt you just for a minute, and we'll come back to the propulsion system. I want to emphasize something. You know, this economy of ours is in terrible shape. We've got a $12 trillion national debt, on and on and on. Free energy. You know, what if we can have all the energy we want without any real cost? You know, that's critical. These Russians replicated the Searle effect at the Russian Academy of Sciences, right? And that's on my website. You can read about it. And that's a free energy process.
Well, Bob, I agree with you there wholeheartedly. I think we should have this. But do you think that those boys who are making so much money on energy, they want to give it away for free? That's the problem.
I don't think so, but let me just indicate. I got my notes here. I want to make really sure that this becomes clear. The production of energy without the burning of any kind of fuel does not necessarily violate the laws of physics. So many physicists keep saying, Michio Kaku is an example. He said investors call him up every day and ask if they should invest in free energy devices, and he says it's all nonsense and they shouldn't do it. But listen, George, if you make negative energy at the same time in equal amounts of the negative energy, if you make positive and negative energy in equal amounts, energy is conserved. So you use the positive energy and throw away the negative energy, and it doesn't violate the laws of physics. I keep telling people this. I'm trying so hard to make it clear, and so many of these Luddites in the physics community are squashing. You know, imagine you spending 10 or 15 years working on a free energy device. You get an investor lined up. He calls Michio Kaku. Michio Kaku says it's impossible. But it's not impossible. These physicists, these Luddites, do not look around. They tell you there are no UFOs. They tell you there are no extraterrestrial visitations. But they don't look at the literature, or they don't research it. They sit in their ivory towers and believe that if extraterrestrials were here, they would come and tell them. Free energy is possible. Let me emphasize again. If you make positive energy at the same, and equal amounts to the negative energy, and you use the positive energy, you're okay as long as you shed the negative energy.
What it's going to be, though, Bob, it's going to be suppressed. It's going to be the haves and the have-nots. That's why I'm glad that someone like John Hutchison has developed something like this, and they haven't muffled him yet. But I really think it's going to come down to hiding it for military purposes and definitely not passing it on to the masses so they could use it in their own needs and comforts. They're not going to do that to us.
Well, someday the dam is going to break, and one of the first things that could happen, these conventional physicists who are, people I used to hang around with ought to wake up a little bit, and smell the coffee, because it doesn't necessarily violate the laws of physics to produce free energy. It's a zero-point process, George, and you can do it with water. We could power the whole world with water. By pumping the system just right, you can break the water up into hydrogen and oxygen at 0 point. And you shed the negative energy, and you get the positive energy at the same time. Free energy can save us or help our economy. Imagine if the United States became the leader in the world of high technology in free energy. We could change things tremendously. How much do people spend on energy, George?
Oh, too much.
How much do you spend on your car, driving your, gasoline? Stan Meyer had a car that ran on water. It was a zero-point process. It cost you nothing, more or less. And Dr. Thomas Henry Murray had a free energy device, a 50,000-watt generator, tabletop device, 50,000 watts tabletop, and that didn't have anything in it, just coils and capacitors. John Hutchison's familiar with Dr. Murray's work. And Nikola Tesla had a free energy device and patented in 1910.
George. I know. All right, let's get into some of the propulsion. We'll get back to this area, Bob, because it is important. John, in terms of propulsion, let's say it's in a UFO or it's in one of these triangular-shaped devices that they're seeing all around the planet. How would it work for propulsion? How fast could they go?
I would say unlimited speed. And also, no problems with inertia and turning. There was a proposal given to the U.S. government by the group I was with some years ago for that aspect for micro payload boost, helping out rocket ships and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be the way to go in hyperpropulsion, going faster than light.
Silent? Is it the relatively silent, or does it make a lot of noise?
These machines are relatively silent because there's a lot of film crews that have filmed the effects in here. Levitating water was something that John Ealer, director of photography, was filming for the History Channel. They didn't show that in that show, Earth Black Holes, but it's very quiet. All you hear is some spark sounds in the other room. I'm at the control panel operating all the different dials and that.
Does the size of the equipment determine the size of the vehicle that needs to be lifted, John?
No. I think that I've lifted up like just under a ton, as well as that was in the one of the labs I had. And here, that was filmed by a Disclosure Project representative, 1,500 pounds. So you're dealing like 70 watts, the lowest power, but doing all kinds of incredible lifting factors.
So let's say in a vehicle, where would you put the device in relation to the rest of the, like a cockpit or something like that?
Well, you get rid of the motor.
Okay.
And the transmission systems, and put that inside of a car, and then put a shield around it that would be an anti-gravity shield. Then you could simply steer it in all different directions, up or down, or at any speed you want to go.
Let me just indicate here that probably we're talking about cancellation of the long-range electromagnetic effects of the universe. You know, inertia, if you make a right-angle turn or a left-angle turn, you normally experience what they call centrifugal forces or inertial forces. But inertial forces are thought to be associated with the rest of the universe, the stars in the universe at far distances. But if the electromagnetic coupling constant is the needed to couple to the long range forces, and if you cancel that on the craft surface, then you cancel the effects of inertia. So basically, if you can reduce the inertial effects through cancellation on the surface of long range forces in the universe, you've canceled inertia. So navigation, you can make right angle turns no problem at high speed because there's no inertia. Also, there's no inertia. If there's no inertia, if the rest mass goes to zero, it doesn't take any energy to move around. You can move as fast as you want.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. Now, what about the people who are in the vehicle when this is becoming anti-gravity? What happens to them?
They don't experience any gravity. They're in their own. They maintain their local space-time environment and don't experience any of the effects. They're just sitting there nice and calm, and they can make a sharp right angle turn, and they don't experience any inertial effects at all. It's just like you sitting right where you are. Traveling is like sitting in a desk.
And what would allow you to continue to go faster and faster and faster?
Well, if you convert more and more negative, more and more, to stay in the zero point, okay? You're in the zero point system. If you go if you go into subspace or hyperspace, however you want to say it, if you go into hyperspace, you avoid the singularities. The whole universe becomes transparent, and you can move as fast as you want, anywhere you want. And you won't collide with anything. The sun, you can go right through the sun because the sun is in a different hyperspace. You're in a different hyperspace. And so this also has to do with the Lorentz transformations. You know, physicists only know about the Lorentz transformation mostly. That's why they say you can't go faster than the speed of light, because they're all based on the Lorentz transformation and the work of Einstein. But, there are three other gauge transformations with the Lorentz gauge alone, and they never use those three other gauges, so three other norms, as they're called. And so basically, physicists are very, very myopic. They don't know what's going on with this kind of stuff. They're stuck where Einstein left off. And but these extraterrestrials, they know about it. You know, that's why these physicists say that there are no extraterrestrials coming here, because they think you can't go faster than the speed of light. But that's all based on the so-called Minkowski norm of the Lorentz gauge. And there's other gauges. There are many gauges, all kinds of different gauges. And so you use these other gauges, the universe changes. Space is also much different. It isn't Euclidean. Physicists think the space is Euclidean. It is not Euclidean. We know that Einstein taught us that it's not Euclidean, but they still think it's Euclidean. It's a complex field, a hyperspace. It's a phase space. It's a Hilbert space. It's complicated, George.
Now, as this is evolving, I'm still talking about it in applications of a craft, and we'll get into some other possibilities, including weather modification and weaponry and everything else. Fascinating. But in terms of in a craft, would that also explain, Bob and John, some UFOs that seem to just disappear and then appear again?
Sure.
Okay.
I would say so, too.
No.
Well, basically, when they jumped to hyperspace, you know, we think that the Star Trek episode was all nonsense, but it isn't nonsense. Basically, if you stay in a zero point and you go to the right gauge, you can disappear. John made all kinds of things disappear. Now, where do they go? If they lose their inertial mass, how much energy does it take to move something that doesn't weigh anything?
Where do they go, John, when they disappear?
Well, go somewhere else and reappear somewhere else, too. I've had a lot of those kind of samples do that. I've had other samples where the steel itself is like aging in time, which was analyzed by the Max Planck Institute some years ago. And they're saying that it appears that the steel bar is aging for every day about 10 years ahead in time. And it's slowly crumbling apart. Now, I sent that bar off to my scientific partner, George Hathaway, in Toronto, Canada, who's had these bars and that analyzed extensively and shown to many, many different scientists that written up reports on them. So it's quite interesting. I mean, when working with these kind of fields, like you mentioned the Philadelphia experiment,
yeah, absolutely. You know, old Al Bielek comes on the show every once in a while, and
he's an interesting fellow.
He's one of a kind.
You know, I used to think that Al Bielek was making all that stuff up, but I'm not so sure. You know, it sounds very, 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 very far out. But now that I really have a better understanding of of phase-space physics and gauge transformations, I'm not at all sure. And let me also tell you something else now. It's very, very important. You know about the Big Bang Theory, right?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
I may not agree with it, but I know about it.
Well, let me just say this. A friend of mine, Dr. Barry Bruce, a very good theorist in general relativity, a former professor of physics, a fine PhD physicist, did a series of calculations where he tried to explain redshift. You know, when we look out in the universe, we see the light from distant stars is shifted to the red. And right. They think that people think that it's because the universe is expanding. Okay, but my friend did this calculation, and he put in the gravitational effects of the stars, and that causes the light to redshift. So his results indicate that the universe is not expanding, that this redshift that's due to gravitational redshift, not recessional. The universe apparently is not expanding in Euclidean way, the way people think it is. Instead, George, probably what's happening is that time is expanding. We have time that's coming out all the time, right? I mean, time is always expanding. So if time is expanding as a vector field, then that makes it look like the universe is expanding. But very probably, in my opinion, the universe is infinite and eternal. There never was a Big Bang. There never will be. It always has existed, always will exist, and you can go an infinite distance and you'll find more stars. The universe apparently is the redshift is due to gravitational redshift, not recessional redshift due to an expanding universe. So my results or my friend's results indicate, and I confirmed this with my calculations, it looks like the universe is not expanding. It's expanding in time, but it's not expanding in spatial coordinates.
All right, John, I wanted to get back to what you said, that some objects disappeared and mm-hmm. seemed to end up in certain spots. Could you do that at will, or did that just happen?
That started to happen some years ago, random. It was more or less, I had no control over it, George. And then later on, many years later on, in 2006, I was approached by film people down in Hollywood, and they wanted a 13-episode television show with mm-hmm. a friend of mine, Ron Meloloni, of BAE Systems. We put together 13 episodes. So one of the episodes we were trying to do was the Philadelphia experiment. So I decided to play around up here on a hot summer day with a toy Navy ship and some water. And actually got the little toy Navy ship to do unusual things. The water started levitating. The ship would send sparks off into the air, as well as actually wink in and out of existence. And luckily, I videotaped all of that to show the TV people, because we were going to try a full-scale Navy ship, which we would have bought from Crown Assets Disposal up here in Canada. But unfortunately, these people kept us going for a couple of years, and we never got around to the 13 episodes.
I'm just wondering, John, if you could develop some kind of teleportation device that might use some of the same principles for sending people from L.A. to St. Louis instantaneously. Almost like, you know, the beam me up, Scotty routine. But is that ever going to be possible?
Oh, that's for sure. That's going to be possible. Some of the DOD literature talks about it in their.
Just a minute. John, you teleported the piece of wood into a piece of aluminum.
That's right. Yes, I did. And also sawdust. Also sawdust.
But that's not the same, Robert, as a person.
No, it's not, but it's the principle, George. How do you get a piece of wood inside a block of aluminum?
Yeah.
Without going through the surface.
Well, remember during the Philadelphia experiment, I think it was Al Bielek's brother who talked on the program about seeing people half and half, their bodies in the ship, but like they were melted into it. Remember that?
Yeah. Now, listen, George, I believe that the laws of physics are not laws of physics. You know, they're not fixed. The laws of physics are malleable. You can change the laws of physics. That's what my analysis says. When you change the strength of the electromagnetic coupling constant in a unified field, if the electromagnetic coupling constant is the basis of all fields, and if you can adjust the electromagnetic coupling constant, you can modify the laws of physics. So the laws of physics, this idea that one size fits all for all time, that's not true.
No, I guess not, but that's amazing. Now, when I saw pictures of the USS Eldridge, I saw what looked like huge coils, John Hutchison. So maybe they were trying this, huh?
I would think so. I've seen these kind of coils inside of some of the old destroyers I worked on for the Artificial Reef Society of British Columbia. Gigantic coils, degaussing coils. But I don't think it was for the Philadelphia experiment. I think it was just ordinary radio operations. But with Navy ships, they have.
But, John, you use coils. You use Tesla coils. You know, that's how you produce canceling electromagnetic fields. The Searle effect uses fixed magnets mostly, but it's the same effect. You're canceling magnetic fields. That's what produces this phenomenon mostly. It's also electromagnetic, too, in general, but the big effect is produced with coils. That's why Tesla was so famous. These systems almost always involve either magnets. We don't understand the magnetic field. People think that Einstein explained it, but it's not true.
We don't understand it. Not quite. Let's take this break. We're going to come right back. We're going to talk about how this is being used or can be used as electromagnetic weapons. That's next.